This is a Historic England podcast, sponsored by Ecclesiastical Insurance Group.
Welcome to Irreplaceable, a history of England in 100 places. I'm Emma Barnett, and in this series, we'll be exploring the amazing places which have helped make England the country it is today. We've been asking you for which places you think should be on the list, and we've already received hundreds of nominations from people across the country. But you can still nominate at historicengland.org.uk/100places. That's the number 100 and then the word places. Together, we'll find out just why our panel of expert judges, including Professor Robert Winston, George Clark, and Mary Beard, have selected these 100 locations from your nominations to tell the story of England. We'll be travelling across England, visiting some well-known wonders and some lesser-known places on your doorstep, all of which have helped make this country what it is today. So, are you ready? I am. Let's find out which places you and our judges have chosen as irreplaceable. Today, we continue our journey into our science and discovery category. I'm joined by Jane Siddell, Historic England's Inspector of Ancient Monuments and a science enthusiast. We'll also be hearing from our science and discovery category judge, Professor Lord Robert Winston, on why he picked these places. Robert is a Professor of Science and Society and Emeritus Professor of Fertility Studies at Imperial College London. And today we're hearing about two of the locations that have played a huge part in our understanding of health and disease. We start in a little Gloucestershire market town called Barclay. This picturesque spot is home to Dr. Jenner's house and hut, where Dr. Edward Jenner pioneered vaccination against smallpox and shared his work with the world. Smallpox was a big deal in 18th century Europe. It killed more than 400,000 people each year and was known as the speckled monster in England. So how did a country doctor take on this monster? And what did it all have to do with a cow named Blossom?
My name is Owen Gower and I'm the museum manager here at Dr. Jenner's House, Museum and Garden. A discovery in this house went on to change the course of human history and resulted in the eradication of one of the most feared diseases known to mankind. Today we are in the Chantry. It's the house where Jenner lived from 1785 until his death in 1823, and it's now a museum. And the real importance of this building is that this is the house that Jenner lived in when he carried out experiments into the use of the disease cowpox to inoculate against the more feared disease smallpox. And that was the discovery, or at least the pioneering, of the practice of vaccination. So if you care to follow me, we can head out into the garden and see more of Jenner's life. So we're heading up towards, it has various different names. We like to call it the Temple of Vaccinia. That was the name that Jenner gave it. Others call it Jenner's Hut or even Ted's Shed. It's a remarkable building, really. It looks like a little hobbit house. It's a thatched hut, and I think the idea was that Jenner would sit there and read and relax. But after he had pioneered the practice of vaccination, he decided he wanted it to be a gift for all people. And so he encouraged people to come to the Temple of Vaccinia after church every Sunday, and there he would, free of charge, vaccinate the local population of Barclay. That was Jenner's gift to the people of Barclay and to the world. We believe that probably when he was still an apprentice, he came across the country belief that those people who had caught cowpox would never catch smallpox. Someone came to him and said, it's a dairymaid called Sarah Nelms, and she said, I've got a case of cowpox. Jenner then found a guinea pig. We don't know necessarily how willing he was. It was an eight-year-old boy called James Phipps, and we think that Phipps was the son of Jenner's gardener. And so he inoculated James Phipps with cowpox. What happened next, which perhaps we would think as being very controversial, was normal medical practice in the time. Jenner then, what they call, variolated James Phipps, and that is deliberately infecting him with smallpox. And that was used as a medical treatment. It was a precursor to vaccination. And I think, much to everyone's great relief, Phipps did not contract smallpox. And Jenner got very excited. He wrote everything up and he sent it to his colleagues at the Royal Society and said, this will change the way that we protect people against smallpox. And the Royal Society wrote back and they said, this is not enough evidence. And so Jenner got very flustered and he went and rushed out and inoculated all manner of people, ranging from his sons, his nephews, to the other locals. And he continued to collect anecdotal evidence as well. And eventually he had gathered enough cases that he was happy. And he just went and published it anyway. He self-published this work that he called The Inquiry.
May I not, with perfect confidence, congratulate my country and society at large on their beholding, in the mild form of the cowpox, an antidote that is capable of extirpating from earth a disease which is every hour devouring its victims. A disease that has ever been considered the fervent scourge of the human race.
Within months, it was a sensation. By the time of Jenner's death in 1823, so this is, he published The Inquiry first in 1798, so by 1823, the practice of vaccination had spread around the world. And the word vaccination actually comes very neatly from the Latin vacca for cow. And so there is a direct link here between vaccination and Blossom, the cow from whom Sarah Nelms contracted cowpox. Less than 200 years later, smallpox was declared completely eradicated. And I think he would be extremely proud and pleased to know that his prediction came true.
A worthy choice indeed. We caught up with our category judge, Professor Robert Winston.
What I suppose is interesting is that really what changed already established immunology was the use of vaccination. And vaccination, of course, has led to a whole range of different antibody reactions that we can induce for a very large number of communicable diseases like measles, like mumps, like whooping cough, diphtheria, all of which killed children at regular intervals very frequently in the past. So I think Jenner should be really celebrated. It's worth actually, if they do go to Jenner's house, looking at the cartoons of people like Gilray, who have got the most amazing drawings of the fashionable use of vaccination for cowpox. There's one wonderful drawing of a very large woman sitting at a table with other people with a huge cow growing out of her arm. And this was public health plus some very, very important science, the science of immunology. What's really interesting to me is that immunology now has changed from Jenner's time to being relatively vaguely easy to understand, to being completely impossible for anybody to understand. Certainly me, it's beyond me. Immunology is one of the most complex areas of modern medicine.
Whilst we're on the topic of disease, our next location had a big impact on our understanding of cholera. Jane Stadell's here with me in the studio. Jane, can you tell us a bit more about this?
This is a fantastic choice. This is simply a pump on Broadwick Street in Soho, around which a breakthrough was made in the study of waterborne disease. It's such a simple thing, but this was a time, the 1850s, were the period when actually London cemeteries were literally overflowing with bodies. The Burial Act was introduced because the whole centre of London was so unhygienic. Diseases and epidemics were rampant, particularly in the highly developed parts of London. And so to have someone actually looking into what was causing these diseases was tremendously important, but also very unusual.
So what's the water pump got to do with it? How does it all fit in?
The pump was really central to Dr. John Snow's thoughts about how cholera was being transmitted. People being superstitious and worried and sceptical thought that a miasma was the way the disease was transmitted.
What does miasma mean?
Miasma means a dread vapour, something that you couldn't see, you couldn't touch, you couldn't taste, and yet the disease was spread by it.
So there were myths circulating about how
huge,
this actually worked.
Huge myths, no science at all. But people were terrified. Thousands and thousands of people died of diseases that couldn't be seen, couldn't be traced, weren't understood. And that's why this very simple piece of experimentation was so important.
And he thought it could be waterborne. We should also say at this point, Jon Snow is not Game of Thrones or the news anchor.
He's not, but in many ways, he's a bigger hero. He saved more lives than either of those two are ever likely to do.
Well, what is fictitious, to be fair? In 1854, then, when an outbreak happened near Dr. Jon Snow's home, he mapped around 500 deaths to identify the nearest water source, which was this pump?
This particular pump. And so what he wanted to do was test his hypothesis, like any good scientist would do. He had a hypothesis. Was it right? How does he test it? Shut the pump off. Now, anyone that's ever carried water for a long distance can imagine how much opposition he faced.
OK. And in the sense of what this discovery meant, or did he get the credit? What do we know about that?
He certainly got the credit because he shut the pump off. People stopped dying around it. It was as simple as that. It was a brilliant piece of experimentation. So he got the credit. There's a plaque on the site, but more particularly, there's a pub named after him.
Yes, I know that pub very well. I'm happy you brought it up. It's one of my favourite watering holes, and I didn't know much about the history. So thank you for informing me and all of us who are listening to this podcast. That's it for this episode. We'll have another irreplaceable location to explore next time. Thank you very much to Jane Stadell for joining me and to Professor Robert Winston. And just to remind you, you can still vote for the places you find irreplaceable to be featured in a future episode of our History of England at historicengland.org.uk/100places. That's the number 100 with the word places. You can also join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter using the hashtag 100places. We do love to hear from you, so do make sure you rate, review and subscribe, crucially, to this podcast. Then you will never miss an episode. Thank you so much for joining me, Emma Barnett. I'll see you next time for another episode of Irreplaceable, a History of England in 100 Places.
This is a Historic England podcast, sponsored by Ecclesiastical Insurance Group. When it feels irreplaceable, trust Ecclesiastical.